Hello, this is producer Ben, and if you enjoy listening to great Catholic content like this, then please consider supporting The Quest Atlanta, where we do our very best to make Catholic content that's engaging, thought-provoking, and spiritually fruitful. So if that sounds like the kind of content you want to listen to, then please consider going over to thequestatlanta.com and dropping a dollar or two in the old tip jar. Thanks so much, and keep on listening.
AM 1160 The Quest presents Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults.
Hello, this is JJ, and on this very Disney episode of Honest to God, we talk about who's a hero, who's a zero, who's a Hercules, and who's a Hunkules. While it's a very simple topic this week, we don't waste any time getting deep into the topics portrayed in our favorite fairy tales. All this and more coming up.
Right. Hello and welcome, everybody. Super excited to be here today. You are listening to Honest to God on AM 1160, The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. This is episode number 2 of Honest to God, and super excited to have a lot of returning guests in studio today. Everybody from, we got Julian, we got Jaira, we got Miriam, we got JJ. I think we got producer Ben today. It's pretty exciting. Show notes, Benny, always doing a killer job over there. And I promise I wasn't going to let anybody know that he was here, but on the floor over here, we got Dave with no E. It's just D-A-V.
Nice.
Not pronounced Dav, though. Pronounced Dave, right?
Exactly.
All right, good. Exactly. With no mic, so. No, but we're super pumped to be here today, and we're going to be kicking off this episode talking about Disney characters, heroes and zeros. This was actually the brainchild of an episode we did for All Saints Day when we got way too into Gaston for a little bit.
And so we're going to happens all the time to me.
I'm telling you, what a great problem to have. Mm-hmm. So we're going to expand on that a little bit today, get into some more stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. Before that, though, we're going to start, as we do all things, with a prayer. Any volunteers? Oh, Julian, you got it. I can tell.
Oh, man.
You got a I'm good at praying face. That's a compliment.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. We'll start the prayer in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Heavenly Father, thank you for this wonderful gathering of great minds. And I pray that we can just come together as one and honor you and learn from each other and express our feelings about Disney and the heroes and zeros that exist in our world. Amen.
Just a segue from our last one. Is there a patron saint of cartoons?
Saint Clair is the patron saint of television, I believe. So
awesome.
I think
Saint
that would
Clair,
count.
Pray for us.
Pray
today.
For us.
Pray for us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Before we kick things off, though, we're all going to do one fact because you've all been here. We've all got your five. So give us one, starting over there with Julian.
Okay. So I had a fun fact, but I changed it after I met JJ.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Because I thought it would be fun to say, when I met John Henry many, many years ago, I had essentially the same hair as JJ, just a little bit different color.
That's true.
That
I remember
true.
That. Wow. Luscious locks.
Luscious locks, yeah, down sure. to my shoulders.
Awesome.
I'm sure you were beautiful. I can picture it.
Yeah.
But not anymore. I'm just kidding.
No, you look great,
thank
Julian.
Thank you, thank you.
When I was 16 or 17, I was rocking hair about your length. Not nearly. I didn't have the waterfall curls, though. You know, it was just sort of, it was wavy though. Yeah. I took good care of it. I wasn't one of those guys like Sunshine from, Remember the Titans, kind of greasy hair.
Oh, yeah.
No, mine was beautiful.
No, it's hard work. I woke up at 5.
I'm telling you. I saw you with a bottle of hairspray in the back earlier.
And they might not know what time it is. It's like, it could be 9 p.m. for all they know.
Yeah, you have no idea.
I'm doing this for the past 12 hours.
It's a great point. It's currently 11:55 Mountain Standard Time where we are right now.
So, yes, PM. It's true.
Yeah. All right, Jaira, you're up. What you got?
My fun fact is that I have seen the movie Pocahontas.
Yeah, you have seen
I have seen it, yeah.
What kind of a weirdo hasn't seen the movie Pocahontas? That's, Miriam, what's
that,
your fun fact?
That would be my fun fact is that I haven't seen Pocahontas. Yeah, and then what's even funnier, the funner fact is that, we're in the same family and she hasn't watched it for some reason.
So then have you seen the movie Blazing Saddles?
I have seen part of that while my brother was watching
in my periphery.
I couldn't hear it over him laughing though.
Do you believe the fan theory that Blazing Saddles is a sleeper sequel to Pocahontas?
I've not heard that theory, actually.
I just made it up.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was just thinking cowboys and Indians. All right, JJ.
My fun fact is actually almost a converse of a boring fact, and it is that I'm completely white, but no one can manage to guess that. Everyone comes up to me like, hey, so what are you? Are you Greek? Or some people guess some type of Hispanic. I'm like, nope. Mom's family from Germany, dad's family from Ukraine.
Yeah, you got some killer racial ambiguity there. That's yeah. good. You can nice. Play, like, if you were in a movie, you could be from, like, 80% of mm-hmm. the planet.
Yep. If there's a word cloud for me, ethnically ambiguous is, like, right there.
That's so true.
Yeah, I like, if you said, I'm from Pakistan, I'd be like, all right, or yeah. Italy, okay, uh-huh. or the Philippines, sure.
Oh, yeah.
People ask me about the Israel-Palestine conflict all the time. Constantly.
Yeah.
All right, and Dave on the floor. Can we get a mic over to Dave? I want to hear one fun fact from Dave.
As far as my mic goes, Dave.
Sorry, Dave, you're going to have to holler or speak.
That's wild. One fun fact from Dave with DAV.
We're going to call you Dave on the floor. That's okay.
Oh, I already said I can't pronounce my G's last time I was here, but that was Rick who said that. Oh, man. I dropped out of school 6 times.
Heck yeah. Whoa. All right, Dave. We had a guest named Dan awesome. A while back who had a similar fun fact. We're going to let it go for Dave.
Yeah, thank goodness it's 2 different people.
Yeah, for real. Both just 3 letters in their name, though.
That's yeah, right. Well, wow. Uh-huh.
All right, so like I said, this show is actually sort of an outgrowth of a previous show we had where just as like a stupid cold opening thing, mm-hmm. I just threw something out there about Gaston having mm-hmm. no idea that Gyra had written a paper on Gaston mm-hmm. and how Gaston is actually the good guy in Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then we made some offhand comments about how we had to do a show about this. And here we are. So yeah. really excited. We got a good crew. Wouldn't do it with anybody else. If we didn't have Gyra and Miriam here, I would not have shown up to do this show.
Wow.
So, and you said, Gyra, that you got some good hate mail.
I call it hate mail. There was, a friend of mine. She, goes to my church. She listened to the episode. She clicked on the show notes. Ben, graciously provided the link to my essay there. And she had some very strong opinions about it. She wrote me an 11-page paper about, how I should really rethink, my positions on this and asking whether I had even seen the movie and, lots of thoughts that.
And have you changed your mind? Do you recant?
Nothing compelling comes to mind from that essay. So I think, and the one criticism that I would say is legitimate is that, which is not my fault. I had a word limit on the essay. I can only write 100 words. There are a lot of assertions in there that I didn't flesh out clearly.
Sure.
Because, I'm just saying it. And so she would be like, where's the evidence for this? I did the best I could, but a lot of it is just statements that aren't like backed up necessarily by what I have. But I could write 11 pages on
you
this.
You could back it up. You just didn't have enough time.
Exactly.
To
so, and I, instead of going, point by point with whatever, the things she had problems with, I think I could reassert what like my official take on the movie is, because obviously, I don't know if you've read it, it's a very tongue-in-cheek.
I read every word of that essay.
Yeah, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I mean, you can tell that I'm sort of being like, oh yeah, actually, this is a good thing, and stuff like that. But, the thing about that movie is that you can't come at it from the perspective, you can't come at it and accept the premise of the movie, because I'm critiquing the frame. So a lot of her argument was like, but the movie tells us this. It's like, I know what the movie's telling you. I'm telling you what the movie is hiding from you. I'm reading in between the lines. Right. And so when you come at it from that perspective, you realize that the stuff that they're criticizing about the movie, think about, you have this main character, Belle, and we could get into the fact that this is completely different from the original fairy tale, which she brought up. I don't know if you've heard Jordan Peterson's take on Beauty and the Beast.
I haven't.
He has like the opposite take where it's like, oh, she represents feminine chaos and she's going to order the beast, and the beast is the manly nature, entertainment, or whatever. He likes to make everything into this Jungian model because he really likes archetypes. I would, against Jordan, I would just say that the Disney version is not the fairy tale version. So if you're talking about a mythos of elements or motifs in a fairy tale, you can't use the 90s version written by a feminist who based Gaston off of old ex-boyfriends. Which is true,
is that
by the
true?
Way.
100%
true.
From an interview? How do you know that?
Her name is Linda Wolverton. Yeah, she's a feminist, and she helped write Beauty and the Beast. And she said that she wanted to make a character based off of all the men that she dated that she didn't like. And so, classic, female projection onto these stories. I hate to be all anti-woman and everything, but it's kind of hard when...
Well, you heard it here. The gauntlet has been thrown down, Jordan Peterson. If you want to respond, we might be able to pencil you in on the show coming up.
It's a very stuffed schedule with all the guests.
We're like
big
February,
names.
But maybe mid-March, Jordan, if you're interested.
Mid-March.
That's right. But I appreciate how you said you're not going to recant of anything. Nothing was compelling.
Nope, nothing was compelling.
You were listening to Honest to God, where no hills are too small to die on. So
that's absolutely true.
We like that a lot. That's great. And we might get back to Gaston here in a little bit, because I really did enjoy that. But I want to open it up a little bit, because it just so happens that over the course of the last few months on this show, I have talked about both Gaston and The Lion King, and how Scar, while he is a bad guy, I will admit, he gets a bad rep, and I understand his motivations, right? But I don't want to go. I don't want to rehash that unless we've got time later on. Anybody have anything else? We can talk about Disney positive characters. We can talk about characters that are presented as good but turn out as bad, or vice versa, and just our opinions on it. One of my favorite lines, and I'm not trying to make this the Gyro Show, but we just got into this last time, that you said was, turns out all of our childhood was just a psyop. And I want to talk about that, though. I think that's really interesting. I'm not getting into conspiracy theories, but the fact that we were fed as children a whole lot of just modernist nonsense, this relativistic nothingness. And I think it's worth getting into.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Other examples?
Well, I mean, I think I would just want to bring up, I think Jair mentioned this earlier, I can't tell. We literally talked in the car on the way here for an hour about this.
I went point by point in the 11-page hate mail that I received, and I had to address everything.
That's beautiful.
But just specifically looking at how Disney completely reworks the original fairy tales into something that the fairy tales were not intending at all.
Mm-hmm.
And even so much as, you know, completely reversing the ending to send a completely different message,
mm-hmm.
Totally subverting it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with The Little Mermaid, for example, which we were not allowed to watch as children, mainly because of how disobedient she is to her father.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in the original ending, she turns into sea foam. Like, mm-hmm. that's, she has
the
a tragic ending.
The Hans Christian Andersen.
Hans Christian Andersen, right. She turns into sea foam.
She gets punished for, you know, consulting a witch.
She literally goes to, like, an occult practicer and is like, give me legs and so I can marry the man I want. And then she does it. And then in the movie, she gets away with that. Like, she gets to just marry the guy and it's all good and happy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what?
Well, it goes from a cautionary tale to something along the lines of, right, you've disobeyed your father, and she's, what, 16 years old, too?
Yeah.
This one, right? You've gone against all social convention and literally dealt in the occult.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. Here's a beautiful, you know, here's a wonderful prince who's going to love you, and you're going to live happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, from our stance, we're humans, so we're like, yeah, of course she's in love with the human.
Mm-hmm.
But just saying,
the best.
Just saying, if a human went to a witch and was like, okay, hear me out. I really need the bottom half of me to be a fish. I really need that. We'd say they're crazy, and rightfully so.
Yes.
I want to see a movie the exact same plot as Little Mermaid, except they're all reverse mermaids.
Yes.
Top half is a fish. Bottom half is a very different vibe to the entire movie.
Yeah.
When this fish creature like stumbles off up on land and tries to marry the prince.
It doesn't have to be bilateral though. I'm thinking left and right.
Oh, I like that actually.
So many ways to draw a line down the middle.
All right, yeah. I'm a writer. Miriam's an artist. I think we can get this going.
Let's make that happen.
We can make it happen. Yeah. After she finishes making the alternate ending of Beauty and the Beast, where Gaston obviously ends up with Belle, as he's the rightful winner of her.
Obviously, he puts a spear straight through the sternum of the beast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Julian, what you got?
Well, we were talking about Little Mermaid earlier, and I pushed back a little bit in that. Okay, so yeah, she messed up. Yeah, she disobeyed her father, but in light of the resurrection and the crucifixion, King Triton, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Sacrifices himself to save her.
Mm-hmm. Despite
she's a sinner,
despite her sins, despite her disobedience, he mm-hmm. still sacrificed himself to save her so that she could have eternal joy.
Mm-hmm.
And King Triton does not look unlike the giant mural of Jesus Christ on the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in mm-hmm. DC. Anybody ever been there?
Yes, I've been there.
It's like Greek god Jesus. He doesn't have a beard, but he's like super ripped and blonde and blue-eyed and just peering down with his giant triceps over the world. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe they were on mm-hmm. that before Little Mermaid was.
Perhaps.
I mean, I would only push back on that a little bit because I think, you know, we get salvation as, you know, repentant sinners. You know, Christ sacrificed himself on the cross. And heaven is now open to us, but if we remain, you know, unrighteous, unrepentant, we're not just going to go straight to heaven because he made that sacrifice.
Right.
And the point is that they're kind of glorifying and they're saying the best thing actually is to pursue your own desires above anybody else. When that shouldn't be the message of the movie. The message of the movie should be, you know, I don't know, make some sacrifices and life isn't all that fun sometimes.
Is that not the message of most Disney movies? Well, the first thing that you said, right? The
idea of you should... what you want is more important than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah,
do what feels good and
exactly.
follow your heart. Don't worry about what is actually good.
Mm-hmm.
100%. I've had a friend who said to me that like the God of today's society is self-autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or that's redundant, but autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the ideal. And you see in Disney movies, like, and shows especially, the like common theme is kids need to decide things for themselves because parents are too stupid to understand you.
Y'all, that goes so much bigger than Disney movies. So every single kids movie, I swear, I won't let my kids watch so many things that I see on, you know, on television, on Netflix, on whatever, because that is the message. Look at these idiot adults trying to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. When all I need, when I know what's good, I need to make choices. These bumbling fools. It's kind of like all parents are the stupid sitcom husbands from like the 90s.
Mm-hmm. And exactly. Crazy. And the like the level is like such like YouTube like politician 300 like viewers level of like of like adults think they know what they're talking about, but I don't know what a 401k is. Excuse me.
No, that's awesome. It is a really tragic and frustrating thing. Yeah. I think. Producer Ben.
What about like, okay.
So are we including Pixar Disney in this?
100%. Yes? Okay. 100%. Yeah.
My favorite Pixar Disney movie, Brave, nice. I think changes the message ever so slightly. And it begins by showing you that same message that what you want is more important than what your parents want for you. But by the end, it changes it to, you need to get over yourself and just kind of accept that this is your life and you don't need to go against your parents to get what you want.
But doesn't she end up not marrying any of all the goofy Scotsman characters that she didn't want to marry in the beginning?
Well, that's correct. She doesn't end up marrying any of them, but you can... Actually, she ends up flirting with a couple of them at the end. And so
it implies she's open to it.
Yeah, it's going from her not being closed off to getting married now because she sees that her mother just wants the best for her. She doesn't want to take her down. And her mother seeing that sometimes you just have to give her a little more space and she will do what you want her to do.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. You know, Disney movies have gotten so much better since they stopped killing all the moms and started making this deep emotional trauma between the moms and their kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So much more relatable.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Well, I read that the other day, something about how Disney movies have shifted from there's existential threats to you and your family to your family screwed up and you need to like heal emotionally within your family. And I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if I feel like that's a positive thing.
I feel like, and my friends make fun of me for this because I always tie things back to the sexual revolution, no matter what we're talking about.
I totally,
like we were talking about burritos. What does this have to do with feminism? But I think that it, in some ways it's more relatable because since the sexual revolution, since the breakdown between relationships between men and women, since you know, fatherlessness and single motherhood, that family dysfunction is sadly so much more relatable to people. I don't just necessarily know how I feel about because the more pervasive theme, I think, is that your family is the threat. And I think that's the vibe of, they're like, no, the threat isn't external. It's not some other people. It's not your family against someone else. It's you against your family. And if you think about it, your parents are sort of the first way you experience God in a way. And if your father's not in your life, how can you expect to understand a heavenly father who loves and cares about you when you've never had this worldly version to show you what that love looks like? And so, that it always goes back to the sexual revolution, in my opinion.
No, and I hear that. I get made fun of fairly regularly for bringing a lot of things back to that and saying, you know, this is when our culture really started to break down. And I teach a theology of the body class, and we go back and we talk about everything that comes from that. I take it back a step further, though, just a little bit, and say it was oral contraception. Once we had oral contraception that allows the sexual revolution, we see the breakdown.
I would go a little bit further and say that maybe it was the invention of the baby bottle, but, you know.
Back a little further than that and say maybe it was the fact that Martin Luther was not hit by that lightning bolt right before the Protestant Reformation.
I would go a little further and say it was when Eve tempted.
Dang it, that was gonna be mine. I'm gonna go back a little further and say that when Lucifer was actually created and chose to fall away.
Do what thou wilt. But you know, I think
are we really gonna fall into the blame God for everything?
Well, no, not necessarily, but I think the real message is that it always is the fault of women. And I think we can all agree on that.
I disagree with that. I always blame, and maybe it's because you are a woman and I am a man. I always blame Dude, I blame everything on fathers. I always come back to blaming everything on fathers.
I think it's good. I think it's natural to keep your own sex accountable for what they do. And I find myself a lot more belligerent of women that are not doing their jobs than of men that aren't, even though I understand that men have their own role in society.
I was having this conversation with another administrator at my school the other day about how when a female student does something wrong and then they come to me like crying and very upset, my immediate response is like, oh, it's okay. Like, it's going to be all right. Let's talk about it. And we're going to take care of everything. Like, I would never give a girl a ticket if I were a police officer. Ever. If she cried, you give me a little bit of tears. But when a boy comes to me and he's like really upset and like sniffling or whatever, I'm like, what's wrong with you? Like, get out, wash your face off and then come back to me. And this was a female administrator and she was saying, see, and I feel the exact opposite. And I was like, isn't that cool? Isn't that good?
Awesome.
Yeah, we need that.
I like the idea of what Jira was saying about like each sex holds their own sex accountable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want like men going through the street saying, why do we make a dollar for every sex?
I bet Jira can get into that though. If we want to talk about the pay gap, there's a lot more.
What pay gap? Exactly. Is the real question.
Yeah, and maybe we can get into that in the future. But one thing I want to come back to earlier, we were talking about the shift from there's sort of an external threat to the family or whoever our protagonist is in Disney and whatever kids movie we're talking about. And now it seems to be more internal, right? I always think about when I watched Encanto and I found out that Bruno was not actually evil. I was so mad. I was like, no, I wanted like an evil guy who's presented as evil. I thought he was going to be evil, not just sort of the wayward, misunderstood brother. And I think this is why it bothers me, because I feel like we have so many movies, kids movies, adult movies, whatever, just action thriller kind of movies where the bad guy isn't really bad. He's not really evil. It's because of bad things that have happened to him. And is he really accountable for that? And I don't like how there's this messaging that seems to be pushed that evil's not, like, evil doesn't really exist. And we're a matter of our circumstances. I just finished watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy with my kids 2 nights ago. Here's the best part of that about that movie. Sauron is evil. You know why? Because he's evil. And evil exists. And he wants to do evil things.
Yeah, I think there's a place in, like, film and TV for characters that are just evil and evil. And there are also a place for, like, characters that are just misunderstood or have legitimate, like, goals behind their evilness.
Right.
Like, I love the character, the Riddler, in the new Batman movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's a fantastic Batman villain.
I love that.
Because he is persuaded and he is motivated by Batman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is his reason for being evil, is like to take down society and do that kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this, like, looking for those evil things. And I think we're putting not enough emphasis on those big evils.
That's a good point. The reason it's better for kids is because every story is going to be the same. It's always going to be a conflict between good and evil. If you're going to zoom in on one person, you're going to look at the conflict of good and evil within themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot more complex than say, here's a good guy, here's a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have a bad guy that's pure evil, it's not like it's bad writing. It's just that he's a symbolic representation of two forces fighting against each other. That's why you have it more simply put than, you know, this internal conflict. And, you know, maybe the whole Disney theme is them being like, you know, we need to make it more complicated. And, you know, actually, it's about the force of good and evil within us. It's always about that.
Right.
But it's always about, you know, humans struggle against their own fallen nature and their original sin. And that's like the tiniest point at which you can find the conflict. But it's always going to be between good and evil. The question is where.
Yeah, I totally hear it. Maybe it is the complexity, especially in regards to children's movies, that bothers me, because I have a 10-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, we talked about this when we did a masculinity episode. My son wants to slay dragons.
Yep.
Right now, literal dragons, but eventually it will become metaphorical dragons and all of these things. But that desire is such a good thing. And so I want him to have heroes and see stories of people who are slaying dragons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my second favorite movie of all time, I think, does this extremely well with both doing the internal conflict and showing these just pure evil villains that are trying to stop it. Rango.
Sure.
The movie about a little lizard who has an identity crisis and becomes a cowboy in the Old West.
Is it true that entire movie was shot in live action with Johnny Depp before they reshot it?
I'm going to say yes, because that'd be awesome if it was.
Yeah.
But
I love that movie.
It's a good movie. The movie is about Rango, and it's about his like struggle to find himself and like not pretend to be someone else, but actually truly become his old man and his own man. And the, I guess, message of the movie is that a man cannot walk out on his own story. But it has these villains in Rattlesnake Jake or in the mayor, and who are these, like, Rattlesnake Jake is like the embodiment of evil itself, and he's like this fairy tale almost, as he is, that he's seen as this, the Grim Reaper is his nickname. So he's just, he comes to kill.
Right.
But then the mayor is this simply corrupt person. There's no redeeming qualities about him.
Oh, sure.
You can't see into him. But Rattlesnake Jake, who is like the Reaper, actually has almost a rapport with Rango.
Right.
And they can respect each other because they're not trying to like take advantage of others. They are simply like, Rattlesnake Jake is simply evil. That is just what he is.
Right.
He doesn't try to be anything else. He doesn't try to seem good. He's just bad. Mm-hmm. He's going to make sure you know he's bad, and he's going to kill you.
Yeah, there's something that you can respect in that person, even if you hate everything that they stand for.
Yeah, like
as opposed to the corrupt.
Like what you say, you'd rather have someone that like hates everything and like is a part of ISIS, but they will die on that hill than someone who will just like be mundane about it and not really.
One of my most controversial statements. Talk about hate mail. I got a lot of hate mail for this one. I said on
Pints with Aquinas.
On Pints with Aquinas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said that I would rather my son join ISIS than grow up to be a man who doesn't have a backbone, doesn't actually believe in anything, and his only job, he feels like his only purpose in life is to be nice to other people and not hurt people's feelings.
I respect that.
Yeah, 100%. I would rather him have a passion and burn for the, because I can work with the fire.
Right.
I can work with that. We can mold fire and we can move fire, but. Not the nothing, not the apathy.
I mean, Jesus says, if you are lukewarm, I'll vomit you out of my mouth.
Boom. So exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks. I was about to say that.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're in the same mind.
What were you going to say, Mary? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say
that.
She was going to quote the Bible verse.
I think it's really funny. That's like one of those things that like lots of people say one time and then like, maybe that could be misunderstood. I'll leave it behind. And like everyone explains it away, you own it. You're like,
I meant that.
I said that. I meant it. Let's talk about it more.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
No, I'm with Gyra on the every hill is a hill I'm going to die on. Like that is the train that
that's
I'm
the
on.
Point of hills.
If you have an opinion, you can. If you have an opinion, then have it. You don't need to like be sorry for having it. But yeah, I think that's true because there's no sense. And I think that's one of the most toxic things about liberal modernity is you're not supposed to want anything except, consume your own desires and follow your baser passions. You're not supposed to follow some higher order, even if that's what you want. That's why they love, the woman working in a corporate job and they hate the stay at home mom because she's committing herself to something higher and not pursuing, autonomy above all else. And so if you have in ISIS, at least they're committing to something greater than themselves. That's the conservative
message. That's what it actually is,
that's what Christianity is. You're saying
outside of me.
Exactly.
I am not the center of the universe.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that's why it makes sense. And it's the difference between, something just like there's nothing good you can do about it. Like you're not doing anything for any cause whatsoever. And a cause that is just a little bit like misdirected.
Right.
That's why, I don't know if this is sort of related, but C.S. Lewis says the pagan is the pre-Christian. Because he's not bad inherently. He sees the world. He's like, this is wonderful. I need to worship something. He's just, not ordering it towards the real supreme being of the universe. So I think that's the same idea. It's like, it's a good energy. Focus it correctly.
Absolutely.
No, I just wanted to ask in a sort of general...
Socratic way?
No. The way fairy tales are for something, they serve a purpose. Like there's I want to ask kind of what fairy tales are for and what Disney is using them for.
And we're going to open after the break with that question.
More of Honest to God is coming up on AM 1160, The Quest.
Let's see. I have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and Paramount Plus, Spotify, and Apple Music.
Is that all?
Oh, and HBO Max.
There's nothing wrong with having streaming service subscriptions, but is it helping to bring you and others closer to Christ? Consider making the cost of one of those services to be your monthly donation to The Quest. We're totally listener-supported. We rely on donations from people like you.
And SiriusXM, too.
Please, prayerfully consider making a monthly donation to support AM 1160 The Quest.
And now back to Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160, The Quest.
We're continuing our discussion today on Disney heroes and zeros and childhood movies and entertainment in general and how modern secular culture has ruined everything.
So true.
Yeah, it's a good conversation here on Honest to God. And I want to pick up where we left off with something that Miriam said when she asked right before we took the break, what are fairy tales for? Question number one. And number two, I'm going to paraphrase you, how has Disney totally ruined that?
Yeah.
But let's start with what are fairy tales for? I think that's a really good question and something worth getting into.
You thoughts on that?
Well, I would like to hear if anyone else has thoughts on it. Just
before before Miriam tells you the right answer.
No, exactly. Yes.
I don't want my answer to like affect. I don't know. I feel like I don't want my answer to shape what other people.
Well, it's not going to shape Julian's because he's going right now.
Yeah, let's go.
I mean, on a basic level, fairy tales are just for lessons that we can learn on a low, I don't want to say intellectual level, but just kind of just on a basic level, just kind of lay foundation.
Well, that's the question, right? Are fairy tales didactic, moralistic by necessity?
Yes.
Absolutely.
In order to be fairy tales?
I think this will go into Miriam's answer, but I would say not necessarily, but in the sense that they reflect the natural order, of course they're going to be moral, but not because they have to have a lesson. It's not like an Aesop's fable kind of thing.
Okay, yeah, that was my question. I was actually going to bring up Aesop's fables in a second. JJ.
I'm going to put it out there. I think the original point is just to scare kids. Okay. I mean, that's the common theme. Sometimes it's for a moral reason, like, oh, respect your parents. Sometimes it's like, hey, could you go to sleep a little bit earlier? We're tired of dealing with you. Otherwise, the witch is going to steal you.
If you don't, a witch will eat you.
That's so true.
Yeah. All kids who are up after 8:30 get devoured by a sea witch.
Yeah.
No. That's a good lesson. Fear is healthy. Fear is healthy.
It can be. Yeah.
I think, and you can tell I've listened to a lot of Jordan Peterson because this is going to be my answer, but I think fairy tales are supposed to be a low resolution image of how the world actually functions.
Okay.
And so when you that's why you have like these archetypes. I don't know if you know this, but fairy tales can actually be categorized. I don't know the exact
system. Yeah, they can be categorized by number or something like that. Okay. It's like a type 3-1A fairy tale or something like that. It has a number like that. They'll be like, that's Cinderella or something. Like
right.
That.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, that's how many there are in different cultures that they can be categorized by motif.
Right.
Because they're everywhere. Because they provide these lessons on how the world works, basically.
Okay. Right. But you have like these fairy tales that exist in almost every culture with the same motifs. And Disney is taking those things that are supposed to be not exactly accurate, but again, like functioning. They function as if someone were to kind of what they glean from it is actually true. That's why they're so deep within us that they exist in every culture. And they're taking that and they're being like, we're going to present another story based on this that everyone knows is a low resolution of the world and completely subvert it. But you're going to be like, oh, well, this is the story of Beauty and the Beast. So that's how the world functions.
Right. That's going to be the natural conclusion of that.
So,
and that, you know, relating to, we were talking about the original version of Beauty and the Beast in the car on the way here, which is, you know, there's no Gaston in the original Beauty and the Beast. So they're essentially creating this new villain that that didn't exist in the original. The original was the real one who was being obsessive about, you know, Belle and asking to marry her over and over again was the Beast in the original story.
I didn't realize
Belle
that.
Came from a family of 12 siblings. She was an example of heroic virtue, and she was the only one out of her siblings that was willing to sacrifice herself to go save her father in the castle rather than disobeying his wishes and trading spots with him in the movie. She was, you know, in the fairy tale, she's virtuous and she actually sacrifices herself and stuff like that. So the original version is completely different, and there's no Gaston, there's no you know, sort of parody of this hyper masculine person that they can put the blame onto.
So in the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, the real villain is masculinity.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
How does the original one end? I'm not familiar with the
She marries the Beast after he it's interesting. There are a few different versions. Did you want to say something, Julian?
Yeah, hop in.
Okay. Wow. I'm sorry.
Gotta be ready.
You just threw me in there. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So
well, it has fallen into my lap, the definition of fairy tale, literally. So from, I think this is Merriam-Webster's dictionary, we'll say, it says, a story, as for children, involving fantastic forces and beings, such as fairies, wizards, and goblins, which is a story to lead improbable events to a happy ending. Okay.
Oh, I disagree with Merriam-Webster.
I don't like that.
Mostly because of the happy ending part.
Yeah.
Most fairy tales that I can think of, like the old school, like the Grimm fairy tales and stuff, they are all
not very
almost definitionally unhappy.
Yeah. Let's stick with the Merriam-Webster dictionary.
Oh! That was good. That was really good.
Do you remember how the original Beauty and the Beast ends? Technically, she marries the Beast.
She marries the Beast.
But
is it a happy marriage?
Well, yeah. I mean, she's doing what she's supposed to do. She is an example of, you know, heroic virtue. She sacrifices herself for her father. She
was an actual functioning part of her family.
Yeah, that was willing to do something. I mean, the movie doesn't even shy. The movie of Beauty and the Beast doesn't shy away from the fact that Belle contributes absolutely nothing to society. All she does is sit around
read romance novels.
That's what
all
I was going to say. No, she does consume trashy romance.
That's all.
And
she
that's
does.
Important. We're not talking about like we're not talking about she's reading Pride and Prejudice over here. There's no Jane Austen involved in this.
There's no Principia Mathematica. She's
exactly.
not
exactly. She is reading like those kind of dirty dime store novels with a shirtless guy that you can pick up. Yeah, and the gas station.
Yeah, the 1700s, 1800s version anyway.
Right.
So, yep.
Right. No, that's great.
I'm sorry. I had a question. In the original, does she eventually have children, though?
I don't think it goes that far into the story, but she does.
She has she has reverse mermaid children. Doesn't make any sense because of the beast. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wow.
Fish on top, legs on the bottom.
So the idea that we came up with here, she actually... Amazing.
No, they don't go into the effects that magic has on sterility in the movies.
Jeez.
No, but I'm... No, it's funny that you were talking about Jane Austen, and it's like literally Belle is like the girl from what is it, like Northminster Abbey or whatever. The whole premise of the story is that it's a Jane Austen story, I'm pretty sure. The whole premise is she likes reading novels, I'm pretty sure, and all the men around her are like, no novels. It has to be like science books or books about doing something.
And novels are considered like we would think of like spending all your day staring at social media or something nowadays. Is that the
probably
maybe analogy? Maybe there's some sort of analogy there. I just think it's funny.
Yeah,
I guess not necessarily to bring this back to Beauty and the Beast, but I feel like
always comes back to Beauty and the Beast.
I think that's the prime example of the kind of movie that we're talking about. But it's not necessarily wrong that she's spending her time reading romance novels and stuff like that. It's just that it's clear that she doesn't have her feet on the ground in any sense of the word.
It just goes to show the point, though, what the writers are trying to show you here. They're like, here's a person that does absolutely nothing of value, and we're supposed to be rooting for this character to do what she wants when she has no concept of what her goal should actually be.
Mm-hmm. It's almost that whole we should root for her to have the freedom to do what she wants rather than the freedom to do what she should.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
JJ.
I was going to say kind of something that goes through like this whole line of things, I feel like, is the Toy Story franchise.
Oh, okay.
Toy Story franchise, it starts and it's willing just to have like a very like specific moral it's talking about, which is loyalty.
Right.
And it's like his loyalty to his kid, to Andy. And then by the fourth one, which I still enjoy very well, but the fourth one is that's the one where they finally change it. And it's like, oh, it's not about loyalty anymore. It's about self-discovery. And something that made me so mad about the fourth Toy Story is the third Toy Story was amazing. And Lotso hugging Bear.
It was a great
bear.
End to it the
was.
Whole thing.
It was such a good end. And the creepy strawberry bear, Lotso, was such a good bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that Gabby, the like doll in the new one, have you seen the...
Yeah, I think so. The one where Little Bo Peep is like a ninja living above a gas station.
Yes, that one. Yeah. I was super excited. They set up like Gabby the doll with the creepy mannequins and everything. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a great like heist movie or something to parody like the prison escape movie.
Right.
And then they just are like, actually, no, the Gabby just gets everything she wants. And it's not a big deal. And she's not a bad guy anymore.
Wow.
Dude. Yeah,
they just give up. They give us a bad guy, but they can't commit to it. They just give up on the idea.
I've seen a lot of that
guy.
In movies lately. What were you saying, Julian?
I like what he's talking about with self-discovery, and I want to bring back Beauty and the Beast. And I know we've hammered it hard, but I think that there's a point here that keeps surfacing or swirling around in my head that I'd like to discuss. Gaston, as you guys keep saying, represents toxic masculinity, as the world would call it. But what if he also represents a side of a man that he needs to discover of learning how to be humble? Mm-hmm. Gaston does not display any sort of humility at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then the beast, you learn that you are the beast yourself, and then eventually you learn to become humble, and then you can become the prince and ultimately king and marry the beautiful princess.
Which is why Belle should have taken up Gaston's offer and been like, through marriage and sanctification over time, I will make you a more humble man.
So what if she did, and the whole story was just personified as she did take up his offer, and then she discovers that he's the beast?
Well, that was the original story of Beauty and the Beast, which goes to show you that Disney is consciously subverting it by splitting it and saying you can either be, you know, not masculine and insecure, or you can be hyper masculine and evil. And so that's the dichotomy they're drawing. They're purposely trying to separate the beast and the masculine things that he had in the original story and saying, no, all that's bad. Those are all my ex-boyfriends that I don't want anyone to be like. So now every girl that now watches a Disney movie has to know that the only thing that matters to her should be doing what she wants and not being a productive person or being a wife and a mother.
Which is why I've canceled Disney Plus.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
Our subscription, and by ours, of course, I mean my sister-in-law's subscription, runs up for the last time in January. So we've got another month of
Congratulations.
Disney Plus left.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, going back to Toy Story, the last straw was the Lightyear lesbian kiss thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, okay, you know what? We're not. Yeah, no interest
whatsoever.
I have
such a hard time like canceling Disney Plus because I want to do it.
Do it.
But there's so many great things like Andor. Have you seen any of Andor?
I've heard Andor is the only good Star Wars show.
Fantastic. Well, The Mandalorian is fantastic.
Okay.
But also I'm watching through like Daredevil and Luke Cage and all those. And they're fantastic pieces of television. Like
those old Marvel like two seasons they used to.
Yeah,
do
the ABC Marvel stuff is fantastic. It's just it's great storytelling and like great characters and actual good and evil and things like that.
See, back before Disney Plus, you could tell a Marvel show was good because you had to download like some extra app for the TV station. Like,
right.
Oh, if you want to watch this one, you need to download like the Watch CWA or whatever app, or like the ABC, ABC Now,
right. ABC Family,
like The Chosen. You can only watch The Chosen if you have.
Yeah.
The
app. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have I've downloaded maybe four apps on my phone. Like ever since I got my phone, and The Chosen is one of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good investment. Chosen,
I think Ben Shapiro might be coming Christian soon.
No, is that really?
Well, yeah, because he interviewed Dallas Jenkins, and he just interviewed
Bishop Barron.
Bishop Barron.
Yeah.
So he's probably going to become Catholic.
That would be so cool.
It's so interesting to just like see like a conversion story happening, like because Ben Shapiro is on camera like a good 90% of his life.
Yeah.
I feel like. So just to see it happening slowly. And, like,
if it did happen, we should just time lapse it and be like, watch the transformation.
Well, Jordan Peterson he's not Christian, is he? He
hasn't officially said that. Yeah, his wife is in RCIA.
Yeah.
Okay. Shut up.
I thought his wife was Catholic
already. Oh, maybe she's Catholic now.
I think she's Catholic already.
She definitely went through RCIA.
I know that one's coming. That's one I'm like, yeah, that is going to come.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, no, we're just waiting on it.
We pray for everyone in positions of entertainment and power to convert to Christ, and it would be so cool
even
to have
fictional
message.
Characters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of which, one thing that I want to make sure that we talk about today, that I've been fiddling with this thought, and I don't know how solid it is yet, but I'll spit it out here in a minute. I want to hear your thoughts on Pocahontas, because I have some really strong thoughts on Pocahontas. Mm. John Smith is my favorite Disney quote-unquote prince, and I feel like it's about 60% because it's Mel Gibson's voice, and Mel Gibson's voice in the 90s was incredible.
So true.
But I want to hear thoughts on Pocahontas.
My main thought, I would say,
you'd have not seen Pocahontas.
I love the mark. The 90-minute mark in that movie. It's,
yeah.
You're really strong.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Climax was something.
How it ends with the stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I'm glad you really demonstrated your knowledge on the topic.
So I have jokingly referred to Kokoum as my favorite Disney princess. For those of you who don't know, Kokoum is the man that Pocahontas is supposed to marry, but she marries John Smith. And I don't know why I call him a Disney princess, but he's one of my favorite Disney characters for the same reasons we're talking about. His only flaw, Kokoum's only flaw, is that he's not a really good conversationalist.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing he does wrong. And I refer all the time, Angie, my wife, when we're talking, I will refer to myself as a handsome, sturdy husband who builds handsome, sturdy walls, which Pocahontas refers to Kokoum as almost as if that's bad. Like, why should I settle just for this handsome, sturdy husband who builds handsome, sturdy walls? I don't know, because he's handsome and sturdy and can take care of you. Like, obviously.
That sounds like the ideal man right there.
He defeats the freaking Winnipegs or whoever in battle in the beginning. He gets like his bear claw tattoos and then he dies trying to protect her from, he's just a man's man. Dang. Big fan of Coco and a big fan of John Smith, actually.
All these Disney princesses are choosing the wrong guys, man. Yeah.
JJ.
I just think it's impressive that they committed to just like, oh, he dies there and it's a good guy who shoots him. Like they just committed to like, someone dies here. It happens.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that part does actually hit really hard when you're watching it.
Yeah. Every time I have a friend who sends me an off-color text message or anything, I send them a gif of the guys marching saying, savages, barely even human. Anyway, it's the most memeable of the Disney movies.
It is.
For sure. But this is my biggest beef with Pocahontas, mm-hmm. is that in that movie, I mean, there's that line about how the Europeans are ravenous wolves who roam the earth.
The entire song, you say I'm an ignorant savage.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of that. Sure, that's pretty par for the course now. I think I'm just sort of like numb and jaded to that. Mm-hmm. But they treat, and I'm never the guy who to say like, is this racially appropriate? Like, I don't say stuff like that. But they treat the Indians as pseudo-human sorcerers and witches who are these spiritual magic being things, mm-hmm. and they're not really people. They can do all these things and do all this and that always bothered me. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that you're cartoonizing, and I know it's a cartoon, but you're making caricatures of these real people who exist and are actually humans who have the same like dignity and struggles and everything that we do, and to make them these like perfect living in harmony, like magical, almost like fairies or leprechauns or something, seems really degrading to me.
I agree.
It's because that's the only way this is Disney slowly becoming okay with having moms in the movie. They were like, no moms, not going to happen, but maybe a grandma, but she's not actually alive. She's like
a tree.
She's a tree.
Hear me out.
So we like we'll need some magic to make that happen.
Yeah.
But I think I can be okay with that.
Why don't we just give her a mom? Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a grandmother and a tree.
That's the best we can do. Okay.
You know what? Just for
Take it or leave it.
She's a great grandma. Yeah. Just because we said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No moms.
We're running a tight budget here, guys.
I will make her a possum if you open your mouth one more time.
Yeah. So this is bizarre though. I don't know if we remember the spiritual warfare episode, and I talked about the witch story.
Right.
Well, she was Native American.
Oh,
I didn't put that in there.
That's
she was also a microbiologist that designed almost every vaccine that we have out there. But
and a witch.
And a witch. Right. A self-proclaimed witch, too.
Coincidentally.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So, but yeah, she was a Native, so it's funny that you bring that up.
Yeah, no, I mean.
But I've just always really... I really like that movie. I like the music in that movie. I like the I like a lot of the stuff that goes into that movie. And I like how John Smith and all of the British guys are not portrayed as evil. It's mostly just whoever the guy in purple is who sings the dig boy, which is a great song, by the way.
Such a good song.
But I think they do a pretty fair job of them, except when they call them wolves that roam the earth, devouring everything that they can.
Yeah.
But it's a treatment of the Indians and how they treat them like they're non-humans. Really bugs me.
It's really weird, but no, Pocahontas is a really good movie.
Super solid.
Yeah.
Pocahontas solid. 2, never seen it, but I'm told she goes and lives happily ever after in England, as opposed to what, dying at 19 from syphilis, which I think is what actually happened in England. It's a super sad story.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
I think she died a little later from syphilis, but I don't think she was that young. I think she lived like 30 or 40 or something.
Oh, yeah. But did she die in England or did she die?
I think she died in England.
Cool. All right, what else? Any other Disney movie thoughts before I go off on the next thing I want to go off on?
Particularly movies?
Yeah, sure.
Mulan.
Oh, we talk Mulan.
Yeah.
Like Mulan, too.
I do like Mulan.
And for the record, we are only, I don't know if I said this first half, we are only referencing the animated versions. None of this real life remake where we make Mulan, where we have literal concentration camps in China. Like, no, we're not talking about that one. We're talking about the cartoon version.
Yeah. Imagine that being your job title. Like, oh, what do you do for your work? What's your job? Concentration camp removal editor.
The Wuhan province for Disney. No, it's gross and it's shameful that they made that movie where they made that movie. Although I do feel like, while I haven't seen the real life version, it would have totally been fixed if they had Eddie Murphy in one of those big inflatable T-Rex costumes running around beside her the whole time talking like Mushu. Because there's no Mushu in the live action remake.
So sad.
I know.
I love Mushu. Music.
And it's not. Yeah, it's not a musical.
Have you guys seen the live action remake?
I have seen part of it, but we didn't.
There's like a great spoiler that I could compare Mulan to Mary.
You're allowed to. You can spoil the live action remake.
Okay.
I just want to say, I feel like the bigger thing to be worried about there isn't spoiling something, but just be very careful when you compare to Mary.
That's true. Yeah. That's
fair. So Mary is the new Eve, right? Mm-hmm. And in the live action remake, you have the bad guy has taken the captive of a woman who is like literally this evil woman. And it takes Mulan to destroy the bad guy and then essentially frees Eve of him. And I think of like Mary was the one who stabbed the serpent.
Interesting.
And I also like to think of Lord of the Rings, who is no man that can kill the evil one. It's a woman.
Don't get me started on Lord of the Rings. That's a whole nother episode. I would love to do a Lord of the Rings episode.
That's good stuff.
I'm all about it. Lord of that trilogy came out at just the right time too.
It did.
When there wasn't any of this woke nonsense that's out there now, but like CGI and everything was at a point where you could do it right.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. I just watched the trilogy this week with my kids.
Let's be honest here. This whole show is just a lead up to when we eventually do like a full Lord of the Rings episode.
Yes.
This is like the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everybody's waiting for Infinity War, which is our 10-hour Lord of the Rings live stream.
Yes. That we're going to do.
Wow.
Exactly. I hope I'm invited to that.
Just because I can't resist it, I do want to say one thing about Lord of the Rings. I had a conversation with somebody not too long ago about Lord of the Rings, and they talked about how they didn't like Boromir. I want to do my real quick Boromir defense to put out on
air. You are just taking
everybody.
It's amazing how much we agree on this stuff. When I was 12 years old, I had like a solid Boromir defense. He was like one of my favorite characters.
Boromir is one of my favorite characters. I think he's probably the most relatable character in the entire series, right? And he is from this city with this corrupt father who's just doing a bad. He's watched his people like lose ground against the armies of evil for generations, right? And then he appears as he goes to help. He becomes part of the fellowship, and he has that one moment. Everybody always hates him because he has that one moment when he tries to snatch the ring. But he's trying to snatch the ring because he's thinking, "Oh my gosh, here's the only opportunity we might ever have to actually like restore my family's honor and save my people and literally not be annihilated." So he does it. He falls into sin and temptation like we all do. And then what happens? Not only does he repent, not only does he recant, he literally dies defending it. It's the most beautiful story. Mm-hmm. The older I get, the more like impact. I just feel that. Mm-hmm. Boromir's the man.
Yeah, he is the man. I always related to him a lot when I was younger.
I like him so much.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got triggered when like all my friends were like, Faramir's my favorite. I was like, why?
No, Faramir can get right. We do not have 5 minutes left.
We do have 5 minutes left.
No, we don't. It's
crazy. Okay, well, you better say what you've been wanting.
All right, here's
to
what
say.
I want to do. Here's what I want to do. And this might go through cards or popsicle sticks. But I want to go around and I want everybody to tell me the Disney character. It has to be Disney. We're going to animate a Disney character, right? The protagonist who is the most virtuous and heroic, like all told. Mm-hmm. Give me a little defense. And then the villain that you believe is most villainous. Who's the most evil villain in Disney? And
so hard.
I know. And I'm just going to randomly. Oh, good. JJ's got it.
I'm going to steal it before anyone takes it. Just off the top of my head, I feel like Mulan.
Is what? Mulan. The most virtuous?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. She's like, she's sacrificing like her life for like her father, her country. And she just keeps fighting. And like, she's willing to do things where she's like, I don't know if I'm going to survive this, but I'm trying to like save the people I care about.
I like that. Mm-hmm. No,
it's a good one. And then
you can also do minor characters, by the way. It doesn't have to be the protagonist, I guess. It can be a minor.
Anyone. I'll think more about that. That'll be next episode. But most villainous, let's just say Lotso Hugginbear.
Is the most evil?
Let's do it. He's pretty.
But he's got a sympathetic backstory, which I don't like, but I'm going to grant the fact that it exists to make it to, like, I'm going to count that towards making him more good or evil.
That explains it, but he is who he is. Got on up to it.
He felt abandoned. For most evil, I think I would go with Jafar. Huh. Jafar, yeah. We don't see a whole lot of motivation other than I want power and I want all of it. And it's almost, he is very much like a Lucifer archetype, right? Because what happens there at the end, he literally, in order to achieve what he thinks is full autonomy, he enslaves himself, right? He makes him, puts himself in shackles and gets himself locked in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
I
he becomes a snake.
I think Jafar, he does. A clue. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. He's literally a snake at one point. I think it's Jafar.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I always got really like creepy pervy vibes from Jafar. Just
I think I was talking about this in the car, but I would have to say Cinderella.
So the like good like
Cinderella. She's
most
good.
Virtuous.
Because she's humble. She's hardworking. She takes her situation. She doesn't complain about it. She is. She doesn't ask for anything. She takes her entire situation without a single complaint or, you know, tries to turn herself into a victim about it. She does her work. She listens to her stepmother. She endures the horrible treatment from them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then that I would actually say that the stepmother is probably one of the most villainous characters, not necessarily just because of her mistreatment of Cinderella, but because she's specifically punishing her for her virtues.
Mm-hmm.
For her virtues.
Oh, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And she has a cat named Lucifer.
Yeah.
That is very
that
true.
That is interesting.
I'm going to use my good one, my most virtuous character, and I'm going to steal every single reason you use for Cinderella, and I'm going to apply it to, once again, Cocoum from Pocahontas.
Oh, my goodness.
He is good. He asks for nothing. He mm-hmm. just does the right thing. Mm-hmm. It's not his fault he doesn't look that good in heels, and it's not his fault that he's not a really good conversationalist. He's just good. Not, I'm sorry. Solid guy. Literally dies sacrificing his life to what he thinks is protect somebody else.
Yep.
He didn't do a single bad thing in the entire movie.
I'm going to steal that one from you because I really couldn't think of another one that's like, you know, the most virtuous. I'm not really the best with like the whole canon Disney characters. In terms of the most villainous, I would probably also say Jafar. I was going to say Hades from like the Hercules movie, but you know, he's kind of funny. I don't know. He's not super like villainous to me because he's a little bit petty and annoying. But
and he has a tragic backstory. Sorry, I am using tragic backstory to apply.
Yeah, there's that too. But that was my original answer. But I stole both of yours.
That's fine.
And let's just not forget about the many virtues of Cocoum. He's handsome.
Yes.
He's sturdy, and he can build handsome and sturdy walls.
I don't understand how that isn't like the description of the ideal man. There's nothing.
It is.
In to get back to my hate mail a little bit, one of the things she said was, you know, like, who wants an uneducated husband or something? I'm like, can he take care of you or not?
Right.
What that is that even the question?
Is he good?
Yes.
Right?
That
is he
is
a virtuous
only,
man?
That is the only question you should really be thinking about. But yeah.
So I'll start with my protagonist. Sort of is Mufasa.
Ooh, okay. Ooh.
Yeah,
okay.
Mufasa he rules in such a profound, almost in divine way. Even when he has to discipline his son, he does it such a beautiful way. I mean, I watch it and I feel like I'm in trouble just hearing him.
Yeah.
It's like, you deliberately disobeyed me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, he instills, he knows he's going to die. He knows, because, I mean, we all know we're going to die, but he knows he's going to die. So he instills everything that he can into Simba before he leaves. And, you know, Simba does what Simba does. And I know most people are like, oh, Simba, he's the best. But I like Mufasa the best.
Does it not bother you that Mufasa is a polygamist who literally makes all the hyenas live in a graveyard where the sun never shines because he owns everything that has sunlight on it?
We never see him send them there.
He just says everything the light touches is yours. I love Mufasa.
I think hyenas love the darkness. So I think you're doing a little bit of a correlation doesn't equal causation thing.
Maybe so.
I think evil if the people are evil and they do, and you know, the evil people do their deeds in darkness, as the Bible says.
I mean, the only thing I remember the hyenas complaining about is how they want to eat food. That's the only thing I really remember. The Scar's promise is not, I'm going to make you powerful and give you riches. It's, hey, you guys can eat. So I'm just saying, I'm not trying to defend Scar. I'm just saying, I feel bad for the guy. He's nowhere near my most evil.
Considering he's the product of a weird it's the socioeconomic status of the times. Mm-hmm. It's a sunlight-based economy, so that was never going to hold up.
Yeah,
it's a very speciesist movie.
Yeah, I agree.
You've got a villain, too.
I don't hate on... Yeah, Scar is not the villain, so my villain is Ursula.
Ooh. Yeah,
Ursula literally is after souls.
Yeah,
right. I mean, you talk about Jafar. Jafar is so like about power. Ursula's about souls. She says, "Poor, unfortunate souls, like come to me and I got you."
Yeah, but that's even worse because it's the souls that are in need and in despair that she takes advantage of.
And she cheats just like the devil. Like she lies and cheats and will take them anyway.
Yeah, and gives the people what they want in order to steal their souls from
them. Yeah, that's really good.
Whoa,
Ursula's really good
and has one of the best like boss battle fights in all Disney movies.
Dude,
absolutely.
So good. That is
like the
terrifying.
Ship into her. Yeah.
That scared me when I was little.
We just did Little Mermaid last year at my school for our play, and we had the best Ursula.
Oh, she was so good.
The
I saw
pipes
that play.
On that girl.
She was fantastic.
Oh my god, she was amazing.
Yeah.
She was perfectly evil in the role. Like it was really, really good.
And like the Hinge people, they were great as well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'd say mine. I got to go back to Mulan.
For
most virtuous, she's just like complete and utter self-giving to those around her for the good of others. I gotta say, for my worst Disney villain, and I think I've gotta say Ursula too. I was gonna say Mordu from Brave because he's just like a power-hungry person when put in this position of you can save your family and you are now the man of the household.
Right.
He instead took all the power for himself and ended up destroying the entire kingdom and his own humanity in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Like Scar.
Like Scar. Yeah.
Like Scar.
Just a little an extra thing about Mulan, though. It's good you guys are mentioning, you know, her heroic virtue. But I always get annoyed when people act like she's some symbol of feminism or something. Mm. When the entire purpose, there's nothing wrong with a woman having to take the place of a man in necessity. Right. Think about judges. Think about Deborah. There are times in history where God has appointed people that, you know, in times of necessity that need to be there. So she's not this like paragon of, you know, I'm a feminist and a woman can do anything a man can do. That has never been the question. To act like it was a question of capability and not roles and the dignity that you deserve and the role that you should be in is I don't like that take at all. So I like that she's like, no, I'm gonna save my dad, I'm gonna fight for him, and I'm gonna fight for this family because I have to.
Well, that's what makes it heroic, is the fact that she's doing something that has to be done, even though she's not as equipped to do it
and she does a fantastic job.
No, that was excellent. Y'all, I could talk about this all day. I'm really enjoying this. Can we please come back and do this again? Are y'all down with that?
Absolutely.
We can change gears to some other type of movie, but I loved it. But we don't even have time for popsicle sticks today.
I think that was a good popsicle sticks.
That was a really good round.
Yeah,
that was
like, good. I agree.
This has been Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160, The Quest.